is.
Second recording.
But he
there
does
we go.
Good job at it.
Brian.
Yes.
You're someone, okay, and now I'm going to lay a few more things down on the, I am less a Star Wars fan than someone who's recently started pursuing general ideas of success in the world, in the academic realm, in the, you know, in the fitness realm, in the financial realm, and in the new media realm. And you're and I will be perfectly honest, a role model that I followed for about 2 years now, and it's worked. So I'm very
right on. What did I do? What did I do right? What vile lies did I tell you and put in your mind?
The year was 2011, and I went to Dragon Con for the first time.
Right on. And did you make it out to the live show that we did?
And I had been watching for about a year or so on and off this weird comedy show that I really shouldn't be because I was supposed to be studying, but it was way too funny not to miss, the NSFW show. So I thought, heck, I'll give this thing a try. It sounds pretty fun. So I dragged my sister Bethany into this thing. It was so packed, we had to sit up in the front row where the pillars in the room.
Oh, you're those people who are blocked.
Yes.
Poor souls.
up near the speaker up front, giving my poor sister a headache.
A massive headache, but I enjoyed it.
And I think this is a great way to start this conversation. In that moment, something occurred to me, because someone who, what I didn't know at the time, but it was someone who had a job, decided, you know what? I don't like
a good
my
job
life,
too.
And I'm
it was,
going
it was
pursue...
like as far as working, like I love computers and technology, and it was a good gig where it's like part of our job was to make recommendations of awesome graphic cards, and you know, like iOmega would show up and say, "Hey, we think you guys should recommend Zip drives and Jazz drives, so here are Zip and Jazz drives for you to try out." And we're like, "All right,
yeah." But so there in that moment, I realized that you had connected with an audience online doing what you loved in a way that I hadn't ever seen any podcaster do before. I'm not blowing smoke. That in that moment, I was like, I want to do that someday. And so I was already doing Star Wars Report at the time, but my story is way too long and boring. I won't go into all the things, but I want to ask you, back before the internet, what made you pursue magic? And I would love to hear some details about that story.
Okay, so real quick, a lot of people, every single stupid magician you ever talk to, even my heroes, you talk to Teller, you're like, when did you know you wanted to do magic? He's like, I was 3 months old, barely out of the womb, and I did my first French drop. It's like, I'm not that guy. Like, I had a passing interest as a kid, and when I went to college, a friend of mine showed me a card trick, wouldn't tell me how it was done, and it pissed me so off that I decided out of spite, I was like, well, I'll show you. I'm about to go to college, which means I only have to be in class 2 hours a day, which means the rest of my time is going to be out magicking your ass. So I learned some stuff. By the time I graduated, I had like a 30-minute decent little show. I'm using air quotes as I say decent to indicate that it probably wasn't that good. But I thought it was good at the time. I never ever thought I would do this full time. And when I quit my job, it was because I was doing a show. Like I was working my day job doing computer stuff. And in the evenings or on weekends, I might have a gig here or there. I had a show that was my biggest show yet. I was being paid $500, which was an astonishing amount of money to me at the time. And to do a full 40-minute show, which meant that I had to like write 10 more minutes of material. I went out and spent that $500 on a sound system so I would be able to do the show. And I went and showed up and did a performance on a boat for a technology company named PC Order. And I found out afterwards that someone in the audience, in the back of the room, who worked for the company, actually grew up in the circus and was familiar with all this stuff. And what would happen is every time I would do a trick, people would run to the back of the room. They would kneel at the feet of this guy sitting back with like, you know, bourbon and soda or whatever. And he would explain how my trick was done. And I was just like, why would you do that? Why would, if you grew up in the world of circus, if you grew up as a performer, why would you sit there and forgive my language and make a full-time project of just shitting on the guy's shows in front of him? And in the middle of being angry at this guy, I thought, okay, Brian, turn it on its head. Imagine 5 years from now, 10 years from now, there's a, you know, you're now regional manager of some bullshit at Dell. And imagine they have an illusionist whose show you hate because all of his tricks are obvious to you. And imagine everybody comes up and asks, you know, hey, how did he do this thing? How did he do that thing? I was like, would you have what it takes to not tell them, to not hold court, to not feel important for one moment? And I realized that what causes people to be this way is missed opportunities, people who never went for it, and they don't know what might have been. They took a safe job. And right as I was considering, you know, what does it mean to, you know, am I okay with this? Who do I want to be? Then I got a raise. And the raise was like substantial. It was like, you know, 20% increase. And I realized this is how it happens. This is how someone gets stuck doing something that's second rate for the rest of their life, something that's beneath what they think they're capable of. And originally, my motivation was not to become famous as a magician. My motivation was not to tour around or whatever. My motivation was I'm on this path in the computer world. I'm good enough at what I do that it's obvious to me that I could play this game and do well. But the entire time I do it, I'm going to wonder what might have been. And I don't ever want to be that bitter washout at the back of the room holding court and ruining other people's stuff. So as a direct result of that raise, I said, I got to take a year off. And I was like, you know, my wife kept the lights on for us. She says, you got 1 year, get this out of your system. And I was like, once it's out of my system, then I could go back. I could work for the man. I could be totally happy to do so. And I won't have to wonder what might have been. And instead, what happened was a year later, I think I made like a third of the money that I made when I was working at Dell, but I had done well enough and that I saw what it took to make it work. And I thought I could do it. I said, Bonnie, quit your job. Work with me. Let's do this together. So for the next 2 years, the two of us worked. And we finally hit a level of bookings where we were busy enough that, and I could see the toll it was taking on our marriage, that Bonnie was full-time doing nothing but hooray for Brian for this, hooray for Brian for that. And so like, I often say that the two happiest days of my life were the day I hired my wife and the day I fired my wife. And so from there on out, it was like, I got an agent, I got a manager. I built up one of the most successful touring shows in the college market. It depends on how you count it, that kind of thing. But I know I was on the road like 250 days out of the year doing 150 shows. And by the time I was age 30, I was miserable because I realized that I had achieved everything that I wanted in life. I went back and looked at my goals from 5 years earlier, and they had all happened. And I realized that now my full-time job was to wake up every morning and hope really bad that nobody would take this away from me. And I realized that for me, that was no way to live because, I mean, just every day living in fear of essentially getting fired from the successful position you're in. So I did something that was very difficult at the time. I think it was 31 when I did it. But I sat down and I forced myself to dream bigger. And I wrote down stuff like, I want 100 times more people to know who I am. I want to be so comfortable in front of the camera that I just go on any show at any time, just run my mouth off in front of a mic. I want to be so famous that random people on the street recognize me and stop and thank me for things that I had done for them. And when I wrote these words, they looked utterly ridiculous. Sure. But then 2 years later, there was the opportunity and I pitched Scam School to Revision 3. And I guess it's been 5 years now that we've been doing Scam School Revision 3. And weirdly, last year, started to get depressed again because I looked at that ridiculous list, that list where I wrote down a list of demands for the universe to give me that I in no way deserved whatsoever. And they had all come true, and that my new lot in life was to sit around and hope nobody took it away from me. So just last year, I wrote another, even more ridiculous list of things. And so I'm still on this exact journey. I don't know if any of this is answering your question about quitting your day job, but I've quit my day job 3 times now.
Well, this is
like George Carlin when he goes packing on a vacation.
Yes, yes.
And this is exactly what I was looking for, because that's the kind of thing that you've been able to accomplish. And frankly, and this is what I love, because there's literally a couple hundred folks that'll listen to this from the mailing list, but I like the idea, because this, and hopefully some chat realm folks, because this is more into, because there's something to you that I've known, because I've heard you say in passing, oh, I write goals down, to where I hear you. Have you read the book Crush It by Gary Vaynerchuk by any chance?
I've not read it. I'm very familiar with Gary, and he and I have chatted several times. And I made the friend mistake of being like, oh, I know Gary. I know whatever he's going to say in that book, which I really I should read it. But I assume it's got a lot of the same conventional wisdom that that he busts out in person.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just finished the book last week, and it really described to me what I've heard you in other interviews describe your journey. And what was it about new media when you decided to use this as a tool to further your career and your brand?
Part of it was first of all, before I tell you all this, let me tell you, spoiler alert, the end of this lesson is that failure is not just an important part of success, it is what defines success. There is no success without failure. Or at least that's what I believe, and it's certainly what my experience has taught me. The reason that Scam School exists is because when I was 31, I did a pilot, or I developed a show for Court TV. They said they wanted a show about scams and cons with a young, outrageous host, and they thought I was perfect. They wanted to bust on people who claimed to have supernatural powers, and of course, I was doing my college lecture on exactly that. They said, "We love your crazy hair, your energy, your youthful look. This will be perfect." And then the person who brought me in handed me off to someone else because she left the network. And what happened over the next 6 months was this brutal, soul-crushing list of compromises. First, it's like, you know, well, we don't know how well – we have a show called Psychic Detectives. So obviously we can't bag on people who claim to have supernatural powers. And I'm like, all right. And then you're like, also, our network is filled with old people. So if you could, let's comb your hair and maybe put you in this sweater. Also, out of all the ideas you gave us – these are all great ideas. Let's do these two that are so cheap that they will literally only cost us $500 in a day of your time. And then what they got, of course, was the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, I think this is a bad idea, but they're the experts. They must know what's going on. And what they got was something that was very, very neutered, very forgettable, and of course they passed on it. And I was so mad. I was so mad because the whole time I was right. And I couldn't say I was right because I was the one who had no TV experience. I wasn't, you know, in a background of this kind of thing. I'm not the one who was writing all this stuff. And it was out of that rage, I was like, I want to host a show. And that was what I wrote down. This is in addition to goal setting, you know, you can do like future projections and you can interview versions of yourself where you want to be and ask certain questions. And the question that I asked was, what does it take to host a show? What's the one thing that you need to do? And the answer was obvious. You need to have already hosted a show. Like, that's what they look for. They want experience. They want people who have what happens after you've performed, you know, 10,000 hours of work in front of a camera. And so thinking that through, I was like, well, what do I got? I was like, first of all, no one's going to have me on the show. I guess YouTube is a thing now. And keep in mind, I mean, that sounds hilarious to say right now,
yeah,
but in 2006, 2007, it was brand freaking new. And and to be honest, YouTube was not even the most attractive of all the online distribution platforms. So I decided, what do I got? I've got a pretty heavy tour this fall where I'm going to see most of America. I got a reasonably charming and funny guy who's going to be on the road with me. And I got a couple of $200 cameras. It's like, well, let's just decide I host a show now called Brian Brushwood on the Road. And we did 23-24 episodes of something called Brian Brushwood on the Road. They're all up at bbotr.com. They're all performed off the cuff. They're all set up on crappy cameras. They're all edited by me on I'm sure pirated software that I got off BitTorrent back in the day because I didn't have any money. And they are of middling quality. But and nobody watched them. Like, I think the most popular of them has like 5,000 views. But it was an extraordinary year because I learned how to tell stories to the camera, how to recognize, how to set up a shot, how to talk in a way that made it friendly for editors to get the right moments in there. And most importantly, by the end of it, after a year of this, I had enough footage that I could act like I had a show. And so then I was off on a jog when I heard David Prager on This Week in Tech. And the whole time I'm thinking like, man, is that the same David Prager who was like a producer Attack of the Show? Or I guess it was still The Screensavers at the time. Because, you know, he had me out and to do that segment. And then I listened, and sure enough, you know, from the context clues, it was clearly the same guy that I knew. And it was like, you know, wait, and they're talking about Martin Sargent? I was on his show like three times. And they were talking about what they wanted to do with Revision 3 as essentially a reboot of Tech TV. And so I wrote up a pitch, basically coming up with intentionally that phrase, the only show dedicated to social engineering at the bar and on the street that we use at the mm-hmm. beginning of every Scam School. That phrase was written specifically to sound techish, to sound like it would belong on a tech network. I pitched it to them. We did a pilot. And when it came time to do that pilot, it was like the one thing that was super important to me was that I not hold back, that I not let somebody else take charge, that I make sure I put enough of myself in there that whatever it was I felt good about. And 2 months later, they picked up the show. And of course, nobody knew Scam School would be, at this point, the second longest running show on the entire network. But sure enough, it did. But, you know, in even then, as soon as Scam School launched, I knew that if what I wanted to reach those goals was to connect with more people, I needed to have more than just the one show. I couldn't just be that guy who ate fire on the internet. I had to be Brian Brushwood. So I looked and I was like, wow, Leo Laporte just commands an army. He speaks and he's so comfortable on the mic. That's the kind of thing that only comes from years of doing it. And I was like, well, how do you get years of doing it? And then it was like a flashback. I was like, well, dummy, you just go out and do it for years and then you have years of doing it. And so that's exactly how BB Live Show was born, which became NSFW and all the other shows that I've become involved with since then.
See, that's mm-hmm. the theme I kind of hear is of just doing it. And this is something that I'm very guilty of with my especially early on, more feeble attempts to create content online, is that you have this false idea that you need somebody's permission, that you need something, B needs to happen before C. And you,
yes.
These false barriers come in front of you, and essentially you've built yourself by saying, you know what, I'm just doing it.
Well, and here's the thing, is the only way you need to believe that you need permission to do anything. How about that? You don't need permission to win. How about that?
Yeah.
In fact, there is actually when we were out on a Scam School shoot, there was some art. I'm sure it's cliche now. I'm sure a bunch of people have it on their Facebook postings or whatever. But I was walking down an alley. Well, let's say it was an alley. Sure. It was probably like an art gallery. I didn't even know it, though. But there was a stencil on the wall, very much in the style of Banksy, from a Oakland artist who, if I had any respect for him, I would bother to learn his name, but I clearly haven't. And it's a chick standing next to a stencil that says, "If you want to achieve greatness, stop asking for permission." And something about that phrase utterly resonated with me. The idea, the only thing you need permission for is to have a chance at the prize without taking any of the risk. You do need permission for that. If you want to go experience standing on stage with Jay Leno on The Tonight Show and bask in the reflected glory of that institution, you have to ask permission. You have to send in a demo reel and hope that they pick you. If you want to command an army on the internet of some of the most passionate, intelligent, awe-inspiring individuals that I've ever had pleasure to take part with, the people so inspiring to me that we essentially named my last child's middle name after them, then you don't get that by asking someone else to give it to you. You get it by getting out and saying, I am okay with the idea of failing spectacularly. And over the years, insisting on failing spectacularly. There's not one part of my stage show that hasn't gone spectacularly wrong. There's horrific tales that I don't even want to go back and visit for a second. They're so painful for me. But they're also the type of experiences that are absolutely vital to get you to get you ahead. I mean, there is no success without failure. So what's the quote? If you want to double your success rate, double your failure rate.
If I may ask, though, when you're talking about risk and failure and insisting on failure, was there any point in time when you were afraid of failing? And if so, how did you approach changing your approach to that?
I am perpetually, at all times, even now while we speak, afraid of failure. There is never a time that I'm not afraid of failing. But I also know that every time the die gets rolled and it comes up craps and I lose, I, in my mind, there's a little mental checkbox next to just one more, you know, the subroutine instantly activates. What did I learn? When I am an old man and I am telling my story, what will the lesson be from this massive failure that just happened? Like that, once you build failure into your success strategy, and you realize that within every failure, there's some other quote as well. And you could tell, like, I've listened to way too many success seminars and audiobook programs.
No, no.
But the story is like some vice president at IBM makes a decision that screws up and costs the company $2 million. He goes in the next day with his resignation, and they say, what the hell is this? We just spent $2 million teaching you something. You know, we're not going to lose you now. It's like that's – once you have that attitude – of like what $2 million lesson can be taken from this? I think that's the right attitude to have if what you want to do is succeed. And keep in mind, I'm still a fraud and a sham and not near where I want to be. So yeah. These are quite possibly the advice of a liar and a fraud.
Well. Yeah, and that false, untrue level of humility, I think, is actually probably part of what makes you so successful, quite frankly. Everything you just said was absolutely not true. And I'm reading a book right now by John Acuff. It's called Start. It just came out last week. And I had the pleasure of actually meeting him in Atlanta when
John Acuff also wrote Quitter, right?
Yes, he did. Yeah, just came out this week. And so I was very excited to read it. And he talks about these five phases that any great life goes for when you want to escape average and go to awesome, which is kind of the premise of the book. And he talks about you have the stage of learning, editing, mastering, harvesting, and guiding. And he said those used to be your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s would be when your craft, what you're doing with your career, that's the way it went. Now, especially with the ubiquitous ability to suddenly reach people online, kind of going to Gary Vaynerchuk's principles, suddenly those prescribed ideas of when and how you can succeed are, first of all, probably false to begin with, but second of all, now less and less of a barrier than they ever were before. And like I will be perfectly honest with you, Brian, I'm the guy who's done a show for 2 years, and it was just around New Year's when I thought, you know, there are a lot of great people that I've really wanted to talk to for a long time, and I haven't freaking emailed any of them because I'm afraid, keyword there, that fear of failure, fear of rejection. Well, they might say no.
Okay, can I tell you one of the most this is some real stuff right here. The worst I have ever failed live on the air was 7 years ago. The local radio DJs, Dudley and Bob on KLBJ in Austin, Texas, have a show every day, right? And I had been on like two or three times before to help promote local magic events or whatever. I was one of many people that they had. And this one time, I don't know if I was just cocky or underprepared or whatever, but I had a show coming up around the corner and I had this mind reading mentalism bit that was all set up. Like it was 8 minutes of telling a story and asking a question. And now you walk down this aisle and you turn to your left. Do you see one of these or one of those? Building up to this giant moment. And each phase of the routine ended in a joke ending that was sort of a failure. But the whole reason it built up is because it gets to the very, very end when I full on reveal my prediction for the card they're thinking of. And we got to the end and I just got it full on wrong. I'm like, it's the King of Spades. And they're like, no, it's not. We're like, King of Hearts? They're like, no. And meanwhile, knowing the trick, I'm like, wait, what? what card was it? And then from the card they said, the Seven of Diamonds, like it was instantly clear to me that at some point they hadn't followed directions, and instead of actually looking at the whatever it is I'd given them, they just picked a card out of their mind. Of course, there's no benefit to me saying that to them. And so at that moment, I was like, ah, what are you going to do? You know, whatever. And then inwardly, I was just agonized, you know, and I was waiting, like, I was like, this is it, man. I know I'm going to hear about it from people who were listening, who this, that, and the other. And to my astonishment, like, you know, nobody remembered. And I was like, huh, all right. Well, it's like, but they remember, I'm sure. And then 4 years later, we launched Scam School. And as part of the publicity tour, like there's some press agents where they said, hey, name some places where you'd like us to send your stuff and maybe we'll get you booked. I was like, ah, do a bunch of booking. They're like, hey, you're in Austin, right? We'll get you on this Dudley and Bob show in the morning. And so I was dreading going and doing it because I knew, I mean, these guys are morning shock jock radio DJs. They're going to remember. They're going to play the tape. And they're like, you know, whatever. I'll just laugh about how I'm glad I failed on their show so I could later become super successful with Scam School. And I went, and even though I had been, this is like the sixth or seventh time I was in that room, these guys didn't remember me at all. And this is, I've got the same ridiculous, crazy spike hair as I always had. They just clearly didn't remember. These are guys who do 4 hours of content every single day for decades. And it was, these didn't remember. And then I realized my entire, I had wasted half a decade thinking about how they know I failed. They'll remember. And it turned out that literally, then I got home and I told Bonnie, I said, Bonnie, the one guys who would remember that time I failed, they didn't remember at all. Isn't that remarkable? And Bonnie says, not as a joke, she says, wait, when did you fail on their show? What are you talking about? And I realized that I was literally the last man on planet Earth who remembered the most epic, soul-crushing failure of my magic career. And then I realized nobody f***ing cares. None of it's on the record. Just let it go, man. Go fail. And then here's the best part, is if it wasn't such a good story, I would decide to forget it myself, because there's no value in hanging on to remembering your failure except if there's a lesson in it.
Amen. There's no incredible value to that. That is incredible.
Wow. Well, but I do have one final question before we let you go for the evening. And we've talked kind of in very broad general terms. So in terms of your life, in many ways that I tried to shamelessly emulate, how does the ideal Brian Brushwood day go? How does it begin?
That was one of my favorite exercises that I wrote when I quit my day job, because I did all those goal setting exercises.
Okay, okay.
First of all, I'm sure you've heard stuff like this before. The closest thing, you know, take this from a deeply jaded, bitter skeptic, that the closest thing that exists to real magic in the world is the power of the written goal. It's like you are programming your own mind. You can't make decisions, commit them to paper, and not somehow affect the deeply subconscious levels of your wetware and cause them to come true. But one of the things that, you know, you wrote on the ideal day is, you know, you want to get up and jog, you want to spend time with your loved ones, you want to do something that makes you money. I mean, in fact, that was one of my favorite moments. Was I went to a Brian Tracy event, and Brian Tracy says, write down three things that you want to accomplish this year. And I wrote down three things. He's like, now I'm going to do my mind reading act. Hold on. One of those is a physical goal, one of those is a relationship goal, and one of those is a financial goal. And sure enough, that's exactly what I'd written. Uh-huh. Like, lose 10 pounds, spend time with Bonnie, make more money. And like, with that being in the ideal day is every day of my stupid life. It's like the times I'm happiest, the times that things mean the most to me, are times when I feel like I've kicked the most ass. And I mean that in those three categories. In my mind, I think about it as a video game. You got your health, relationships, and financial categories. And the days when I've worked very, very hard, like I feel the exhaustion from whatever it is we did or launched or created, and then see the success from it, are the best. The worst days for me are days where I have to wait, and I can't start something else for whatever BS reason. And so instead, as I wait, I sit around and I try to trick my brain into feeling that success vibe by like looking up and reading other stuff, which then all of a sudden I realize I'm that whole reading forum comments on himself. And then it's like, it's this gambling thing where it's like in this roulette wheel of like, you know, is the next comment going to make me feel good or terrible? Like those are the worst days when I'm so desperate to know how I'm doing that I get caught up in the BS instead of being out there kicking ass.
Wow.
Well, could you say that's one of those things when, because you're self-employed, you don't get an annual review, so you're trying to annually review yourself?
If I'm going to be optimistic, I'll say something like that. You know, truthfully, it's like once you've had a taste of, I mean, we've all had that moment when you were in the zone and despite all the odds, you just killed it and you won the day and you want to feel that. And unfortunately, on the internet, you can feel that feeling by discovering after the fact, like, you could write a book and then 2 months afterwards discover a review somebody's written about the book in which they say is the best thing that ever happened to them. And then you get a second dose of that serotonin shot. And then your stupid monkey animal brain will say, hey, man, you were able to get that same serotonin shot, but you didn't have to bother to write a book. Just find more reviews, bro. And then you go out there and then you're just gambling on the internet because, you know, every so often you'll see something that says something nice about you and you'll get that squirt of serotonin. But other times you'll read people, you know, talking about your ridiculous hairstyle and about how you're just a big old fat phony.
You're like, I shouldn't have been following that squirt, man. No.
Well, and that's when the point where you get to the point where someone who is assaulted by 4chan who reacts the way you did, and I won't go into the details for the Star Wars audience, but if you guys want to, you can just head to the YouTube channel for Scam School.
Well, and, I mean, we can at least set it up for the story.
Sure.
There's nothing like having a nice, beautiful Saturday afternoon visiting your friends for a wedding in Oakland. And then receiving a deluge of texts and tweets informing you that you are currently the target of a thousands of people wide pedophile accusation bomb, where just for grins, they pick somebody out of the blue, and today it's your lucky day, and thousands of people are going to get their jollies by trying to assassinate your character.
a scam, if you will. But I'll tell you, but the way you kind of rolled with it, I think is something greatly to be admired. And I'll tell you what, this is fantastic because, Brian, frankly, you don't talk about this enough because you've set yourself on a level to where I don't think nearly enough, and this is just my own opinion, that nearly enough people realize the core of somebody who really, really just kicks ass and takes name, every day to be where you are. And I think that that's something that I've discovered when I was first getting into the internet in general. In 2007, late 2006, I got on the internet. You know, I was an early teenager who was finally actually, you know, using the internet for something other than, oh, there, you can do more than look at CNN.com and read your email. And that's, you know, and that's where I was going into it. And I was a fairly lazy, fat kid who didn't do anything with his life. And I've talked about this off air in different conversations, but a lot of the Star Wars audience doesn't know this. And people like you, who I'd found entertaining for some time, I suddenly was thinking, well, why? And how? And when I started asking those questions, that's what led me to people like, you know, everything we've talked about, people like Brian Tracy or Tony Robbins, and the general idea of it. You actually have to work for this stuff, and that's how later I got to the point where I decided to go to college, and that's what I'm working on this summer and fall. And then I decided I'm going to the military, and I'm doing special forces, and I'm documenting it all and sharing this process online and on the internet in terms of how you can be a leader in a space that hasn't been explored before, because the military is a different route, and they're only just now scratching the surface of what you can do, of what the role of a military officer means in this age. And I want to pioneer that path. And those are things that I've always kind of known were in me, but that's how I lost 50 pounds. That's how I decided to start podcasting. And I'm realizing, even talking to you, that I'm only a smidgen of where I want to be. But I have so much of a better idea of some of the steps to get there. And that's what's so awesome about talking to folks like you, man.
Well, that is super inspiring to hear. And if I was able to play even the smallest role in helping to get you fired up, I'm really happy to hear that. I'll tell you, there is once I started to realize the power of goal setting, you know, I stopped writing goals for, I still write lists every day of things I want to get done. And then there's, of course, you know, every year I write goals, and sometimes I have to rewrite them halfway through the year to make them more ambitious. But I started writing 10-year plans, and there is posted in my shower essentially like a 40-year plan where it says 1999, when I quit my day job, to 2010, sewing. And I consider this the time when I paid my dues, got out on the road, built up a bevy of interesting stories to share on podcasts just like this one. And then 2010 to 2020 is labeled as reaping. This is the time, you know, that I'm trying to get in front of audiences. We're trying to build businesses like scamstuff.com, you know, where we can figure out a way to monetize the presence on the internet, and hopefully launch some television projects that I'm working on right now. 2020 to 2030 is labeled as teaching, because this is a time that I wanted to when I quit my day job, was deeply inspired by all kinds of people who you know, gave presentations on bettering yourself and getting ahead in life. But the ones I valued the most were, of course, people who had done it, people who had succeeded, not people who, you know, there are a few jokers in the biz where you could tell that they spend more time trying to convince you that they're worth something than giving you useful advice. And I never wanted to be that guy. So as hard as it's, and there are brief moments like this where I'm able to speak candidly about, you know, what I do for my plan for success. But by and large, you know, I haven't, you know, people are like, oh, you should write a book, or you should do a series, or do a program, or whatever. These are all things that I still feel like there might be a next or a third level after this in out there doing it before I start talking about it. But hearing stuff like you makes me really excited for hitting that point. And who knows, maybe I'll give up and I'll start something next year, or maybe it'll be 5-10 years from now that I feel like it's time to start really telling that story to everyone. But for now, knowing that I had any small part in your success really makes me pleased.
Yeah, but see, something here that you may not realize is you've had that effect on more people than I believe that you realize, because you've been a part of our lives for the past several years. You've been a part of what's driven us towards these goals. You have had a small part in so many people's lives in doing this, because you may not have reached what you would consider your teaching realm, but in being who you are, you have been a role model and continue to be such to many people. So I think,
man,
you've reached that goal.
You guys are
going to
get me all misty-eyed. I'm going to lose my street cred. The headline on Gawker is going to be like, scam school host breaks down and cries at compliments. That's awesome, though. Thank you for telling me that.
Wow. I think you've come a lot closer to that goal than you realize. It's
yeah,
just
I'll tell
what
you
I mean
what,
to say.
That's fantastic stuff. And this has been far, far beyond my expectations, to the point of, for all the folks on the Star Wars side listening to it, I know a lot will come over and appreciate it. But at the end, Star Wars is a small sub part of the outlet, which is how I began on the internet. And it's kind of laying a foundation of getting experience. But it's by no means the long-term thing that I'll be doing. And so the, in that same
yeah,
way...
Yeah, you do that Star Wars eat
Oh, dear. But,
and smile!
But I'm getting in a lot of trouble now. But that being said, when it comes
you
right
got
down...
got treatments from Lucas. It's all good. Yeah.
When it comes right down to it, this interview's gone far beyond my expectations, and I really do. I'll definitely get you a link to this page, and I really hope, Brian, that you share it with your audience, because I think folks need to hear this.
I would be happy to. It's rare that I get an opportunity to speak candidly about this kind of inside rocket sauce, yeah. So that's really awesome.
And I have by no means anywhere near the platform I wish I did to share what the conversation we just had. But man, it's been fantastic. Tell you what, Brian, we're going to go ahead and let you go. You've been way too generous with your time already, but this has been by far the best interview I've ever done, and certainly the most fun I've ever had. It's far beyond my expectations.
Yeah, so I'll forward that to Justin Robert Young.
Take that,
sucker.
Take that. Well, it was
bar raised again.
Well, but to caveat that, his stories were better in Night Attack too, I will say.
Oh, no, hey, look, I make no bones about it. Justin is the funnier of the two of us. I'm just glad that I can keep us moving forward.
All right, Ryan Brushwood, everybody. Thank you so much, man. And hey, we'll see you at Dragon Con. Tell you what.
Yeah, you got it, man.
Cool deal. All right, have a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, I guess coming up, May the 4th be with you.
All right, there you go. Bye-bye.
Through that.
Holy crap.